Now for something completely different.
Smoke medical weed every day.
The following thoughts on Hoffy Hour represent Ryan Hoffy and Pastit. Listener discretion is advised.
Live from Tampa Bay, you are tuned in to Hoffy Hour.
He's the voice of a generation that got screwed by the baby boomers. Welcome back to Hoffy Hour.
Hoffy Hour. Hoffy Hour. Hoffy Hour starts in 4, 3, 2, Hoppy, Hoppy, Hoppy. This is Hoppy Hour with Hoppy.
What's going on? This is Hoppy Hour. I am your host, Ryan Hoppy. Now, I've been listening to this guy for about 7 to 8 years now. Can't even imagine it being that long. But on the phone line from the Klein and Alley show on 106.7 K-Rock in Los Angeles, the one and only Kevin Klein is on the air. What's up, bro?
Thank you for having me back on your show. I think this is my second, maybe third time on, which means that clearly there are not enough people working in radio that you've had to go to me 3 times.
Well, I was thinking about it. So growing up in Illinois, I listened to Man Cow and all these shows growing up in Illinois. And that was from 93 to 2014. And then there was like a resurgence of me listening to other shows in 2015 through 2018. And then when you came back to K-Rock, or you came back to the radio, and you definitely were one of the more unique influences on my 20s, just from a lot of the subjects you did on Live 105, because not a lot of people were talking about weed, and not a lot of people were coming up with original ideas that didn't involve fake actors on the radio. And I've always had respect for that, because I know a lot of people that do the fake prank calls and the fake dating segments, and I'm just not a fan of it.
You know, what's funny is that I live in L.A., so everyone's obviously like an out-of-work actor, and I was talking to these guys, walking my dog to the park. I met these guys, and they found out I worked in radio, and they all go, oh, great, we work in radio, too. I said, oh, what station are you on? They're like, oh, well, we're on all these stations, and I'm like, what are you talking about? They're like, well, today I played Angry Ex-Husband. Today I was a scorned lover. Tomorrow I'm going to be on Ryan's Roses, and I'm like, and I said, man, I'm like, that sucks that you guys have to do that. You know, like, you know, that's probably wasn't what your goal in acting was, to go on radio shows and pretend to be, you know, someone who got broken up with or whatever. And I realized that the other thing that's crazy and sad about, you know, radio in general, part of the reason I've decided to try to do it a little differently, is that all of them had kind of done the same basic storyline on 15 different radio shows across the country. And I never understood, you know, I always look at it like when I go somewhere like on vacation, there's a bunch of people eating at like Outback Steakhouse, and I think to myself, that's fucking crazy. Like, you would think you would, you know, if you had an Outback Steakhouse where you're from, don't eat the exact same thing. Go try something local, try something different, right? And I never understood why radio always kind of strived to do the same exact stuff. It was like the part that I never got, because obviously growing up, like most people, I listened to Stern a lot. I listened to other originals and innovators, and I would think about, you know, they were funny, but the thing that I liked more than that was that it felt authentic, it felt real. And then you started hearing this sad period of radio where everyone was becoming kind of a watered-down version of the same show, and you were getting something that had been, you know, like watered down over and over and over again, to the point where it just felt like it was all fake. The callers were fake, the hosts were fake, the interaction with the people on the show was fake. And then I was just like, why is anyone going to give this any time? So I thank you for noticing that. There's been definitely an effort made. Not easy. The lawyers make it difficult. The bosses make it difficult. There's never been a period of my career where I've ever felt like I was safe or secure in any job for a variety of reasons. And the other thing is that I kind of keep refusing to do the way that they want it done in a corporate way, which is very by the books, make sure all the calls are pre-screened and the callers are either scripted or whatever. And I just said, that's not me. So, like, you know, it's cost me definitely jobs before. It makes me kind of constantly thinking about what I'm going to do next. But it's like, if anyone's going to spend 3 hours or 15 minutes listening in their car on the way to work, the very least I can do is try to give them a legitimate experience.
I've never gotten the radio stations that are rock and roll or alt or hot talk radio that are run by like nerds. Like, I feel like a nerdy PD works for like Hot AC or Top 40 where it's playing and safe. But I've seen it so many times on radio, Kevin, that all these PDs for rock and roll radio sort of hold the talent back.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's like everyone's, you know, the problem, and it's like all jobs, right? But like everyone's looking out for their own ass, right? So it's like, you know, the boss doesn't want to get fired. So, you know, everyone's kind of looking out for themselves. Once you realize that, that's kind of the thing you have to learn early, because everyone, especially the PDs, will always make it out like, oh, I've got your back, I'm your friend. But as soon as their ass is on the line, then you're not their friend because they'll try to protect their ass. And I had a PD when I got hired. Back when I got hired to do mornings at K-Rock, they had just gotten Kevin Weatherly, who's kind of a legend in the industry, had kind of moved on to Spotify, and they had a PD that came out to work with us. You know, came back to LA after being PD in New York, and he was definitely one of these people that did a lot of trying to make it feel like he had my back and was my friend, but behind the scenes, because whenever he drank, you could get the truth out of him. You'd find out that I was about to be the scapegoat. I was about to be the fall guy for why stuff wasn't working. So, you know, it's luckily for me, because right around the same time I was about to just like be like, this is not going to work. We were fighting too much about what I thought people should be doing and what he thought was going to be the safe play. He ended up leaving. Kevin Weatherly came back. He basically said to me, I give you permission to do whatever you need to do to make this show good. And now here we are. I think we just got our December ratings, the highest the station's been in 9.5 years, mornings, in some of the demos that matter most. And, you know, finally to have a number one. I mean, when I took over that morning show, you know, it, like first few months doing it, year, it was, you know, 20th place. I mean, it was terrible. I mean, it was like, and now to have number ones and 1834 person, all these demos that actually matter. It's nice because I got to do it kind of after doing all the, letting them kind of make bad decisions and just going along with it, but angrily, I finally get to do it the way I want to do it. And now, lo and behold, look what's working, right?
How crazy is it? Because I know you've said on air that you liked listening to K-Rock and listening to Kevin and Bean. How crazy is it that you ended up replacing Kevin and Bean?
Well, it's interesting. A lot of people think of it that way. I never really thought of it that way because, yes, I mean, Kevin and Bean, legends in the industry, 30 years plus at the station. They're a lot of, you know, you talk about innovators. They did a lot of things for the first time, or at least differently, that a lot of kind of shows ripped off along the way. And I have nothing but respect for those guys. And they did what a lot of guys do. They get successful. They make a ton of money. And then after doing it a while, it's not that they don't put in the same effort, but even I think they would say there's a little, you lose a little bit of that fire because you know that you're kind of set and you're set in life. I've never been set. I've never felt like I'm on Easy Street. You know, I did say from an early age, like when I started listening to radio, really listening to radio, I was on the East Coast and I was listening to like DC 101 and, you know, WJFK and, you know, good stations on the East Coast. But the reality is I would listen to Loveline out of K-Rock at night, and it was the Corolla days and the Drew days. And that's when I kind of made my weird goal, like, that station seems like that's where it's going on. So at that point, I was like, I got to do whatever I got to do in this industry to get to that radio station, because that's apparently where you want to be. And, you know, nothing's exactly the path you think it's going to be. And I ended up going to Sirius XM for a while. And then I ended up taking a job in San Francisco where you discovered me, got to kind of use that as a proving ground, got hired in San Diego, then got fired before my first day on the air in San Diego. And then, you know, lo and behold, that's what actually kind of fast forwarded me into the K-Rock world. And, I didn't really know how that would play out. And, you know, looking back now in 2024 almost, I can go, it seemed to kind of weird work out in a weird way. But it didn't definitely happen the way I thought it would be. But apparently people do claim that I said when I was like 10 years old, 12 years old, I'll be a K-Rock one day and I'll be the next Kevin and Bean. So apparently I used to say that. I don't remember saying it, but.
So during the day, what is your process for prepping for your show? Do you talk to your team during the day, or do you guys just talk while on air?
It's so fun. Let me just say, I like that, I like that you really care about the process. I think it's interesting. You're like a student of radio. I know you've been a fan for a while. I know that you've been a big part of shows. But I appreciate, because I think it sounds lame when people get real in the trenches about stuff. But, you know, for people like you that actually care, there's a blueprint to it. And I do think good shows. I got to kind of watch a little bit of the inner workings about Stern work and that team. And I've seen how I think successful shows work as opposed to shows that are less successful. And the part that is very always the same is usually the organization focus is unparalleled. That's the stuff that I feel like is really, really, really kind of stays the same between all those shows. They figure out a way to be at, I don't know what their strategy is, weekly meetings, daily meetings, morning meetings. I like to do as little as possible in the morning of the show because I'm still like waking up like everyone else. I'm going through any updates and stuff like that. We kind of do most of our stuff during the day. After the show, I'm oftentimes at the radio station until 2-3 in the afternoon. And then we'll kind of, you know, as the day goes on, we will send stuff around. Sometimes it's everyone on one group text. Sometimes I'll just want to send stuff to certain people, depending if we're trying to, like, you know, surprise someone or sabotage someone, whatever the case may be. And then, you know, kind of come in the morning and make sure it all looks like we thought it would good look. And then, but the reality is, look, every day we have a plan, somewhat of a plan, and we usually do about 60% of it the way we planned, and the other 40% is kind of unplanned stuff. So
during the day, do you ever like see some idea that comes to you if you're like smoking or whatever and you write it down? Because I'll be thinking and I'll be like, maybe let's say working out and my brain's flowing and I have a Google Docs where I just write down thoughts and then I'll expand on it when I do my podcast or go on air. Because I feel like I have really bad ADHD. It's a blessing and a curse. It works for radio and my brain's always thinking, Kevin. So I'm the type of guy that I'm like writing things down as like a list almost.
Yeah, I do tell myself every like month I should start doing that. It's always my plan is to start writing stuff. I'm like, I should do that. I know I should do that. Usually the thing I've gotten better at is like I'll do a lot more voice memos during the day when like good audio comes up, like in life. More like, you know, just so that I have the actual audio to add to whatever we talk about on the air. If I talk about, let's say I'm at a game and there's an annoying shrieking woman behind me that's got the world's worst cheers. Yeah, you know, I'm better now at like actually capturing that so that when I'm telling the story, I can like play the audio. And then, you know, now that I have kids that are like saying a variety of dumb things and funny things and, you know, calling me stupid man and stuff like that, I just do a better job of trying to like capture some of that as well because it just helps the story. I don't really, if I see stuff that's, I smoked way too much weed in my life. So like I'll tell myself, don't forget this. And then I'll get home and then like, you know, I'll remember I had something. I'll be like, oh, I knew I had something today that happened. It was funny at Costco. And then I'll be like, ah, fuck. But then it'll come to me like 2 weeks later. I'll be like, oh, that's what it was. And then I'll try to work it in. But I mean, you're smart to do what you're doing. It's not hard to do. I should be doing that. Obviously, a lot of friends are comedians and they're constantly sketching stuff down in little notebooks. So I should be doing that more.
Here's what I'm curious about as well. So I've worked on a lot of shows. Some shows talk during the break, and then Rover, nobody was allowed to talk to him during the break, and the line was save it for the air, which was actually very smart because everything was heard for the first time on air. So what is your commercial break process like? Like, are you talking to your team or do you try to save it for the air?
I mean, save it for the air is a good concept. I've definitely said that line before, especially when things get heated during like break about something. The unfortunate thing about a lot of shows is that they think a lot of people are under the impression because they have a microphone and they're in a studio, whatever they say is interesting. So a lot of save it for the air. Sometimes it's worthy of saving for the air. And a lot of times I feel like you get, you know, meandering where the average person isn't, unless they're like a P1 hardcore listener, they're not going to sit through all of the whatever it is, right? I think there's a difference between really good drama, really good storylines that unfold with the real people on the show. And then there's some stuff where it's like, hey, what do you want to order from downstairs? A breakfast burrito or a taco? And that person's like, save it for the air. And like, maybe there's something to that, but maybe not. And so that really comes down to, I think that's like the biggest thing I've learned lately is that when radio was like the only option and you kind of had your built-in audience, you know, hosts a lot of times would you know, I think, not take advantage, but they would definitely get comfortable in, well, we can talk about anything and anything at all will be at least interested. And because they've given the people the benefit of the doubt, that's why people will watch Chappelle go on stage and ramble for 3 hours while he's kind of maybe going to get to a couple of jokes and maybe not. But people will accept that now because it's Chappelle and they're watching greatness and they're cool with it. But if that was an unknown comedian or someone that they had not yet bought into, they're going to get up and walk out after 20 minutes and be like, I don't understand what the guy's even doing. So I think it's true for radio too. I mean, during the breaks, we, if there's updates, obviously we do that kind of stuff. It's a lot of sprinting to, you know, someone's got to piss or take a dump in the bathroom. And then there's, you know, but for the most part, you know, if stuff does happen, we did a dumb thing. It's funny. We invited all of the richest people in LA to a fake wedding, because we wanted to test the theory that they were too busy to go, but they would just send really nice presents, right? So we did that. I've seen it actually get ripped off a bunch since now on TikTok, but we did it probably 2 years ago at this point. And no one had responded, you know, Elon Musk and all these people. We finally got a delivery that came during commercial, but I was so pissed because the thing came and the guy brought it in and it was a big shipment of caviar from this guy that pretty much runs all of the real estate in LA. And, you know, that was one of those moments where I didn't want to fake it and be like, bring it in again when we're on the air live. Let's recreate it. But, you know, people like being a part of a thing when it happens more than like, you won't believe what just happened. Da, 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 da. So, like, it does annoy me when stuff happens off air. I do get mad about that. But, you know, for the most part, I think it's best when a story, you know, happens on the air. And I know sometimes what will happen, like Omar, who's, you know, kind of the one holdover from the Kevin and Bean show. If my wife calls me during commercial or I call her back, there's something going on, there's a rat in the house or something, I'll have a conversation with her that I think is a candid conversation. He'll make sure that he's rolling audio from his end. I don't tell him to. I wish he wouldn't. But as soon as we get back, he'll like interrupt me. Like, you got to hear what a pussy Klein is with his wife, and he'll play the audio. So like even the stuff that is happening during the break sometimes does make it onto the air as it happens.
What is your vibe like with Omar? Are you guys friends? Are you guys co-workers? I can't really tell through the show, and I think that's what makes it good.
Yeah, I don't know if I could tell either, to be honest. I think Omar and I we decided we were going to go hang out socially. Weird Al was doing a couple shows, so we're like, let's go see Weird Al live in concert. And we decided to meet first, get a steak dinner. But then like Weird Al ended up doing a bunch of like non-popular songs that night. So it was just like an old man with a ukulele and a accordion. It was kind of strange. But, Omar, you know, I think of Omar as definitely more than just a coworker. Anyone you work with, that's how many hours you work with, it's kind of hard to just have a coworker relationship with, because you end up really getting to know the person, their lives and everything like that. You get sucked into it. But I think that he came from so many years on Kevin and Bean, where it was very much the host of the host. Everyone else works for the host. And so that's kind of his, not that they didn't have their own family too, because I'm sure they did, but it was very clear. Whereas I'm much more of a, you know, I don't feel like I deserve a better parking spot because my name's on the show or anything like that. I think every single person who works on the show equally has, you know, chance to get their ideas on the air and, you know, so like, Omar and I like Omar. We hang out, you know, when we do show stuff, but I mean, it's like anyone else. Allie, I consider her a friend. You know, I went to like her kid's first birthday party and stuff, but the reality is like we're sick, you know, by Friday, we're sick. We spent 20 hours on the air, an additional probably 20 off the air. It's 40 hours together. We all have families now. We all have, you know, stuff going on. So the likelihood that we get together is rare. I will say this. I was like, I was on Shark Tank this year, for this pizza wine I started called Pie Wine, and I did like a kind of a viewing party, and I invited the show. I didn't really expect any of them to come because it was Friday night, and you know, for some people it's a hike from where they live, and it was mostly for, you know, friends, family, investors, and, you know, people like that. And every single person from the show showed up, and I was kind of like, whoa, like, you know, not that I probably wouldn't have shown up for something that was a big deal for them, but also it was kind of one of those moments where, even Omar, who lives, I mean, Omar literally lives 2 hours. He doesn't, like, L.A. is so big, and he lives out in the outskirts in Rancho Cucamonga. It's like a 2 hour drive minimum. So, like, I was like, oh, man. And then we all got together, and it was cool, man.
How do you guys deal with the traffic? Because in Tampa Bay, it's growing by the day. This area, people keep moving here, and I'm seeing more cars on the road, and I'm beginning to feel like it's getting closer to being like Atlanta. And to me, Atlanta traffic is pretty much just as bad as Los Angeles. So overall, Kevin, like, what is the way that people in Los Angeles deal with traffic?
That's the one benefit of working when I work is that, like, I luckily get to miss it. I drive in at like 4 a.m. I see like three cars and a couple coyotes, and I'm at my job. Like, it sucks on the days when I, you know, we take the day off, or I happen to like hit regular, take my kids to school. I go like, man, it sucks. I can't believe people have to put up with this on a daily basis. Terrible. I don't know what to say. It's always been terrible in LA. It's almost like you can't bitch about it because everyone knows what you're getting into. It can't be an excuse for being late because it's like that is what it is. The good news is that the rest of the country now, like you and pretty much every other major city that's had an explosion in the last, I don't know where all these people are coming from. No one's using comments anymore, I guess, but it seems like every single city now is dealing with it, and I can't figure out where they're all. Like, I thought we lost a lot of people. They were all moving to Texas and Florida, and then I still feel like traffic is as bad as it was, maybe worse. So we had like a nice, that was the cool thing about, you know, COVID, middle of COVID. It's like, it felt like a normal, actually operated probably the way that the city was built to run. Like, roads moved, lights moved, it was caught, and then now it's just chaos again.
I find COVID fascinating because you were in Los Angeles where everything was locked down, and I live in Tampa Bay where we were locked down for 5 weeks. It's different.
Yeah, very different. And, by the way, like, I had a lot of friends that moved out of LA, moved to Florida because of that reason. They're like, I don't want to, you know, and they're like, that's it, I'm moving. I like, you know, I mean, think about it. People like your climate, our climate, Arizona, a few places you can live, you know, can't handle cold weather anymore. So your options are kind of limited as to where you're going to go if you're basically deciding you don't want cold weather. And so, you know, once you deal with that, you're like, I mean, look, I'm in Florida right now, dude. I always love it here. I know Florida's the punching bag of, you know, the United States for a lot of reasons, and rightfully so. I do see, like, you know, drive-by malls where guys are spinning signs, selling guns and puppies at the same store, and I get all that. It's a weird thing, but you make fun of LA for, you know, the fact that they feel they need to put kale in everything too.
Well, also, the hate on Florida, weird things happen in Sacramento and areas like that. I had a radio mentor that worked in Sacramento that also worked in Florida. The records are easy to access in Florida. You can go online, you can see everything. Anything you want to see that happens in Florida, it's put online the next day. And other parts of America, you can't find the info. So I feel like there's crazy. It's like, trust me, Florida's batshit crazy, and there's a lot of things wrong with it. But I feel like sometimes it gets too much hate because we don't know what's going on in, let's say, Iowa or Nebraska. You know, crazy people are everywhere.
Funny, you said you had another radio mentor. I feel like you've got too many radio mentors.
It's nauseating.
It's almost like that word has lost all meaning. It's like anyone you've ever met that works at radio. I thought you got like one mentor and then that's it. And if they die, then you pick another one or something. You've used it quite. I saw on Twitter, you're like, I'm chatting with Klein from K-Rock, my radio mentor. I was like, oh man, what an honor. And then I realized, but then if you look down, it's like, every I ran into a guy at Costco. He's my radio mentor. It's like, oh man, you love mentors.
I really do. I don't talk to as many people as I did in my 20s, but I reached out to a lot of people over the years, but you should be flattered that I reached out for a third time, because a lot of other people were awful.
Flattered. Sorry, I had to reschedule. I was sick. I don't really ever take off. That's one of those days where last show of 2023, I woke up, I felt terrible. I knew I had whatever my kids had, my wife has, combination of strep, 15 other things. And I was like, it hit me all that morning. And it was not the last show. I would have just probably called out sick, but I only take it sick days. And then I was supposed to chat with you, and I was like, man, my voice is barely hanging on right now. And this, believe it or not, I know everyone probably thinks I have a giant sinus infection. This is as good as I can sound right now. So
It's good too, because that day we were going to record at like 5:30 and I had to be asleep by 9 or 10 when I get up at 6 a.m. because I, like other people in radio, don't get any sleep. I need 6 to 8 hours to function if I'm going to a radio job. So it's better now because I don't have to be up in the morning. For you, Kevin, I'll now make this a thing where I'll ask you, what's your sleeping routine like? Because for me, man, I need my sleep.
Yeah, well, first I'll give you the credit because a lot of people don't understand it. It's not just the hours you have to be there. It's all the hours around it, right, where you go. If I'm going to actually even be decent at it, I got to add, you know, I got to make sure I get the sleep. And because I also, when I first got my first morning job, I was in L.A. I was working New York morning hours. So that was 4 a.m. to 7 a.m. because they want to be live from 7 to 10 New York time from L.A. And I, at the time I was, you know, mid-20s. So I was like, oh, I'll just go out until the bars close at 2 and then I'll eat breakfast or sober up or whatever. And then I'll go in at 4. And I realized that's like a nightmare. That's like a recipe for a disaster. And then you start going, if I'm going to take this thing seriously and actually want to be able to be like at my best and not just go through the motions, I got to start doing that thing where it's like you start having dinner at 4 and going to bed at 5. But like as it is now, realistically, I tell myself every day I'm going to go to bed by 9. I don't go to bed till probably closer to like 10:30. And my first alarm goes off at 3:30, second alarm 3:45, third alarm 4, then usually I'm out of bed in my car by 4:30, and then at the station before 5, on the air at 6. So that's kind of the routine. But I do spend I don't nap during the day anymore because it was messing up my ability to fall asleep at night, so I just stopped doing that. And also, I just don't have time. Like, I used to now I basically stay at the station until I go, like, head home and start, you know, try to be there. Like, I don't want to be I don't want to be the world's best. I have no interest in being the world's best dad. I don't have any interest in owning a mug that says, well, I just don't want to be like a piece of shit. So I try to like spend at least a little time, like, actually, you know, focusing or at least pretending to focus on whatever they're doing. And then I kind of, once they go to bed, spend another couple hours, like, just going over the next day's show.
Do you feel like you changed at radio once you were a dad?
I probably should have more, like, I probably should take certain things seriously, like, you know, like, and be more, you know, I definitely shared personal stuff. That's the one thing that's gotten me in trouble. Every job I've had is like sharing personal information about someone in my personal life, right? Like, where I think it's such a good story and I know they probably wouldn't want me to like reveal stuff, but it's so good that I feel like it has to, like, even if I tell myself, all right, this is off air, I still like eventually will give it because it's just, it's so hard to like do the job right while holding back. It's just like impossible. So, and it's definitely cost me like relationships. It's definitely gotten me in some huge fights with my wife. And like, I'm sure eventually my kids will hear, like, it's funny. My daughter was like 4 and she started singing some song, I don't know, one day about penises or something. I don't know where she learned it from, but the thing was hilarious. I put it on the air. And then her principal, I pulled up to like pick her up at school, and her principal was like, can I talk to you for a second? I was like, yeah, what's going on? I didn't think the principal even knew what I did or who I was. She's like, so I was listening to your show this morning, and I heard this very colorful song coming out of little Sienna's mouth. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's, yeah, it was crazy. I don't know where she learned that. She's like, well, she kind of gave me like a judgmental, she didn't really say anything, she gave me like a judgmental look, like a very, I don't approve of this sort of thing. And I, you know, you get some of that, but, yeah, I mean, look, I probably, you know, it's radio. We're not like doing anything that's that important. This is probably the most in-depth I've thought about it, just talking to you because you ask questions where you actually care about the process. But the reality is all that, everything that happens in your life is just more fodder. Sometimes I get annoyed that I like think about stuff to talk about and I realize that all I did for like the weekend was like kid's birthday party and that. And then I get like annoyed because I remember, I know you were a fan of like Opie and Anthony, and obviously I used to listen to shows, but I remember whenever Opie would bring up his kid, I remember that's when, as a listener, I could tell Anthony didn't give a shit about it. So it always made it, it always, to me, that's when you could start to hear the dislike between those two guys, because it was one of these things where it was a big part of Opie's life and Anthony didn't give two shits about it. So whenever he'd bring it up, you could tell it was a weirdness, and it never really seemed like it got anywhere because they both weren't on the same page. And so I remember thinking to myself when I had kids, like, I don't ever want it to be a thing. And now, like, if you think about the show I'm on now, which is K-Rock in LA, and it should be, you know, we're not doing, you know, Seacrest or like any of these, like, it's definitely not like a family friendly Elvis Duran show. So like the idea that I have kids, Ali has kids, she got a kid now, she's trying to have another kid, Omar's got kids. You don't want it to turn into the, my kid did this, well, my kid did this, well, my kid did this, because even though I'm sure a lot of the people listening have kids too, I never want, like, you know, some guy that's like 23 driving around without kids to feel like, ugh, I'm listening to a bunch of people talk about their kids. Because even now, as a guy with kids, I get annoyed out of my mind when I'm sitting around in conversations with a bunch of people and all they want to do is talk about their kids. I can't, I'm like, I check out of that so quick.
And if I do have kids, I don't know if I'm going to or not, but if I do, I'm definitely not going to change on air, because I had a female co-host on my podcast from like November last year until like June of this year. And the first 4 months, she's a mom. She's a single mom of two. And she's 33. She's Greek. She's gorgeous. Everybody thought she was my new girlfriend. Like, we were very close. And she was great on air.
You thought that, or everyone thought that?
Everybody was asking me, are you dating this girl? And I'm like, no, no, no. Like, people were saying I should ask her out. Here's my point. She kind of quit the show because she was saying that at like PTA meetings and soccer meetings, because I would tag her on Facebook and people that I'm not friends with, her friends would see it, and they were kind of judging the show being sexual and raunchy. And I don't really get these parents or teachers that get offended over it, because we were all brought into the world because of sex, and everyone has sex. And I just think it's so judgmental when these parents rip into radio people. And that was my first experience with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, I agree with you. I also think that a lot of times, you know, a lot of people that go for like lowest hanging fruit jokes, lowest hanging fruit topics, because they think it's like, you know, wow and sensationalistic. And that's why so much of radio has gotten grouped into, sorry, I just got my car, by the way, if you're on the beat, that's my pager. But yeah, so at some point, it's, if anyone's going to talk about, you know, any of the, you know, whatever you call, like, you know, raunchy, I think on morning radio, I think there's an extra spotlight on it, because for a while, that's what every show would do, just to try to like be like, wow, we're standing out. And I hear it happen a lot of times on shows, and I hear shows that try to do it very unauthentically because they think it's going to move the needle. But the reality is, like, I think about, if I was just out with my friends and we're all, you know, at a bar drinking and talking, conversation's probably going to be, you know, more R-rated than not, because that's just how we would be when we're hanging out. So, but yeah, well, your point is interesting. And I do think that, you know, I'm sorry you weren't dating her. Sounds like she was great.
She was very hot. She gave me a basket from the Easter Bunny, when I was working at iHeartRadio, and we did a few videos of it, and people were like, she so wants you. And then like 2 weeks later, quit the show essentially. So I was like, no, she does not. She meant well. She was a great girl, but it was like, when she was there, dude, and cared, people were loving the show, but then she just cared about what these moms say, and it's just so pretentious. What I also want to ask you is, what are some of your plans for 2024?
Not get fired is usually kind of the first plan.
That's a very good one.
Yeah, you know, I used to have all this, you know, I mean, look, I honestly, it's doing the show I want to do in the city I want to be in, which is L.A., having creative control, a lot of the other stuff, like I would think everything was under my control. I would get angry when things wouldn't happen or didn't happen or weren't happening the right time or weren't playing the right songs and all that stuff. I've kind of like, I gotten better, especially this last year. So I want to keep going this path of just realizing there's certain stuff that I shouldn't spend any time thinking about mentally. Like, there's just not worth my time. There's nothing I can do about it. Focus on the only thing I can control, which is the 4 hours a day that we're on the air doing the show. Keep growing it. We've got a nice, like, you know, kind of passionate, hardcore fan base that has been building, and now they're finally showing up in the numbers. And that's obviously helpful, really, just for job security. Tony, it's interesting how many people, when things don't go well and when things are new and they're not sure how it's going to pan out, there's all these people, everyone from salespeople to management to people in the building, they all kind of try to keep like one foot in, one foot out on you because they never know. You know, they always don't, they don't want to be too associated with you if things, you know, fall apart, right? Because then they're like not trending up and going well and this and that. Then all of a sudden it's like, I knew from day one this was going to be a hit. And it's like the same people that you knew for a fact were already coming up with like a plan B and a plan C, like 3 months, you know. So it's just, it's very interesting to me. But yeah, just, you know, the only thing that comes with having any sort of success, however you define that as business, some people it's money or it's syndication or whatever, it's being left alone. It's all, I think anyone really wants is just being left alone so they can, if you're creative, the last thing you want is like outside input from uncreatives kind of telling you how to, you know, be more creative. Cause usually, like you said, they don't get it. If they could do it, they would be doing it, right?
Yeah. I just find it nauseating. Like, a lot of these rock and roll or hot talk stations, not to have any experience with this or saying anything from the past, but you just have these nerds running hot talk radio or edgy radio. And I'm like, you're good for like bland music, but you got to have like the edgy guy leading the edgy guy. Cause there's nothing more deflating, Kevin, than when you work somewhere where everyone's talking bad about the PD and then the PD has to try to flex. And it's like, come on, man. And like, this job is not for you.
Yeah, but that's unfortunately, that's like almost comes with the territory of that job.
Oh yeah,
right?
For sure.
Like jeans, a blazer, you know, a haircut that was cool in like '95 still, and then the need to flex whatever their insecurities are on the quote talent. That usually sums up, you know, 85-95% of any working PDs still, I would imagine.
One time I had a PD in a meeting tell me that nobody respected him in the building. And I went, oh man, you should not be telling a part-time board op that.
Yeah. Well, you probably thought you were the one guy he could like open up to. This guy will still respect me. And then he right away looks at you as you lose any little respect you had for him, you know?
Oh, for sure, Kevin. Now, before I let you go, how can people find your show?
Well, K-Rock in L.A., 106.7, we're on the app, the Odyssey. I think we're on Spotify. A lot of people are on Spotify. Search Klein Alley Show. I guess that's, I don't know, they say, you know, that stupid thing everyone says, available wherever you get your podcast. So I assume we're on other stuff as well. I don't really know. If you want the actual funny stuff and not the inside into radio, then you can check that out. And if you're in LA or Southern California, you could find us there.
Well, Kevin, it's been a lot of fun having you on the show, and happy new year and happy birthday.
Hey, thank you. I look forward to doing this for the fourth time when you run out of guests again next year.
I will call you in about 2 weeks, Kevin.
All right. I look forward to returning in early January. And by the way, congrats on sticking with it, dude. I know you were an intern grunt, I believe, at the very, very beginning.
Yes.
And, I don't know if you're still doing that, but
no, I have a full-time job at a radio company doing like producing and that, and then I get to do my thing online, so I don't really have to report to somebody. And my listens have been really good. The company I work for is like, just do your job and we'll help you out. So yeah, I'm not really the bitch boy anymore.
Ah, all right. Well, I will always remember that you at one point were bitch boy and now you're bitch man. But regardless, congrats, and sticking with it is not a lot. Look, I'm sure you could speak to this. A lot of times you were like, I'm going to get out. I'm working at Best Buy or whatever.
Yes,
then,
yes.
You know, the idea that you sticking with it is like 80, you know, whatever the expression is. I don't have a great quote, but that's the big part of it, is figuring out a way to stick with it, because you do that, and then eventually, you know, the right thing happens, the right person gets fired or hired, and then all of a sudden things get better for you.
Here's what happened with me. One of my friends that I was really close to at 102.5 The Bone, that was like 2 or 3 years younger than me, he was the up-and-comer there, and then he quit because of the money, which makes sense, but like, he could have gotten a second job or whatever. He called me about 2 months ago and pretty much was drunk at like 11 o'clock at night, and we caught up for 2 hours or whatever on the phone, but he pretty much told me that he regretted quitting in radio, and I was like, I don't know what to tell you, bro.
Yeah, everyone that has done that at some point, you know, either they had a kid, they had to make more money, or they're like, oh, I'm going to go work for my family. Eventually, they have that moment. They realize pretty quickly after that, you know, what we do is rare. There's like a, you know, not to sound cheesy, there's a specialness to it. And the reality is any other job, even when radio feels like a job, because it definitely feels like a job, you know, the whole reason I got into it, like a lot of people, oh, I don't want to have a job, so I just got into radio so I could just, you know, bullshit with my friends. But every job eventually is going to feel like a job. And, you know, Steph Curry feels like a job a lot of times too. And like, so the reality is, you know, remembering that when you're doing that, it's still probably better or more fun than a lot of other jobs out there. And for people that say radio feels like too much of a job, I'm going to go get another job, like, you haven't worked enough real jobs. Cause if you've been, you know, a waiter and done security and done all these other dumb things, you know, whatever, you start realizing those jobs feel like jobs all the time. At least radio can feel like not a job some of the time, you know?
One more thing. I've been trying to figure this out. What does sweet dibbits mean?
Yeah, we do a thing on the show. I don't really know I'll start by saying I don't know the answer, but we do a thing on the show called Old People Secrets where, you know, like every news station feels obligated to do some local story whenever some old bag turns 106 or 109, and they're always like the exact same beats they do. First, it's a giant cake where the person drools in it, they're wearing a tiara, and then they basically say at the end of the whole thing, they're like, and we asked Shirley what her secret is to a long life. And then they cram the microphone in their face, and the funny part for us is trying to guess what they say. My theory is old people have been attempting to sabotage us by giving us bad secrets our entire lives so that we die off young and then they get all the glory because they get on the news. But one of the times we did it, this woman, they said, what's your secret? And she goes, really, damn it, or something like that. And we listened to her like a million times because, A, we loved the way it sounded, but we were all trying to figure out what she was really saying. And there's all these different, there's still to this day, this happened probably a year and a half ago, but still now people are on a daily basis being like, I think I know what it was, or I think this is what it is, or I found some random candy that used to be around in the 1920s that's been pulled because it was full of lead paint, and they were called sweet dibbits. And then people said, I think she's saying sweet living. I think she's saying, so we don't really know, you know, what it is, but it just kind of became this like fun pleasantry to say to each other. And now, like, when people call that have been listening and, you know, in any sort of, it's probably the biggest question we do get asked is, what does sweet dibbits mean? Because people just call and say it. And a lot of people say it and have no idea what it means, what it came from. I was at the airport coming to Florida, and some guy yells from like four gates away. He's like a real loud sweet dibbit. So I was like, oh, cool. It's hard to be in a bad mood when you're saying it, and it's even funny when you hear the original woman say it. I think she's died since then, so obviously sweet dibbit doesn't work. But at the time, it was a beautiful thing. And look, you know this. Any show that's worth anything, like little inside things. The best part about radio, right? Is like little dumb inside whatever become these kind of big things that stick around, and any show that's worth anything, I would imagine, hopefully over the course of 5 years, 10 years, whatever, develop some of those things that stick around, and that's pretty much that.
Kevin, keep up the good work. It's been a lot of fun having you on the show, and I will text you in 2 weeks. I'm just kidding, but not,
all right.
But
to
not
be,
really.
To be your mentor means everything. Thanks, man. Happy New Year, Ryan.
All right. Thank you, Kevin.
Happy Hour.
Happy Hour is now over.
And like that, he's gone.